Well, good morning, everybody. It's good to be here again, and it's good to be here on a Come and See Sunday. We're thankful for all the visitors that have come out. We just wanted to let you know that there is a class for kids up to age 5. There'll be someone to meet you in the lobby if you would like to have your kids participate in that. But now for today's sermon. I found a quote online that says something along these lines. Almost 2,000 years ago, truth was put on trial and judged by people who are devoted to lies. And that quote is talking about the instance that we just commemorated. Before Jesus' death, he was put on trial by people that simply wanted to condone him of putting these lies together, becoming this person, this false teacher, this person that was teaching nothing but breaking the old laws of God. But those people didn't really understand truth. Those Pharisees, those false teachers who were really the Jewish people at that time who were against Jesus. They didn't understand the full nature of truth because they were so clouded by so many other things that were in the way. They were clouded by the power and authority that came from being these religious leaders of that time. They were clouded by arrogance because Jesus was stepping on their toes, because Jesus, you know, he was called a teacher. They wanted to be called teachers. Those false teachers didn't really like that. But they didn't really have the truth. And that's what we're talking about today, this morning, truth. I know for a Come and See Sunday, for those of you who are visiting here, we like to share with you what we believe as a church. We like to talk to you what we talk about every other Sunday or in our Bible classes. I know it's hard to understand for each of us, but we truly understand that the Bible is God's word, and we would like to make a case for that. We like to talk about how Jesus really is the Son of God and really did come to earth and really was born of a virgin. And someday we can meet him and be with him for eternity. We can truly believe that and truly understand that. And I think that is we are capable, even as human beings with finite minds, that we can understand that truth. The desire to understand truth in general is not something new. Look over at John chapter 18. John chapter 18. This is the instance just before Jesus was about to be crucified. He's on trial. And it's funny, there's a crowd of people that are around him just begging for his death. They don't understand. They literally have truth all, like, they're teaching him. He was able to teach 5,000 people there only a few, maybe years beforehand. He was teaching them so many great things just earlier in that week. He had healed the sick. He raised the dead. And now he's put on trial. And now all of a sudden there's a crowd of people that are calling for him to be killed. So when Pilate asks him in John 18, verse 33, he says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus responds in verse 34 by saying, "Do you say this of your own accord? Or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not of this world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into this world, to bear witness of the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." And Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And I think that's a question that would have been interesting to see Jesus' response if Pilate would have let him answer. At that point, Pilate goes back and talks to the Jews. But I would have been interested to hear Jesus' response, Jesus' answer to the question, "What is truth?" Because even at that time, much like our time, their culture was all about learning something new, about these philosophers, about new religions, about new paganism that was coming from all over the world, because the Romans had really united the entire known world. They were really a melting pot before America was of religion. But now in the 20th and 21st century, we're defined more by postmodernism than religion. And postmodernism is described and defined as a 20th century movement characterized by broad skepticism, subjectivism, or relativism. and a general suspicion of reason. It's according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. A general suspicion of reason. I ask a question based on that. You know, what's wrong with reason? What's wrong with figuring things out? What's wrong with trying to understand truth? It's almost like it's a bad thing to try to find the right answers. It's almost as if it's a bad thing to tell people that, hey, I think I know what's right. You're looked at as being presumptuous, as being arrogant, if you think that you have an answer. And many people will tell you that. It's going to be harder for us in today's culture, and as the culture gets worse and worse, because many people would call our truth irrational, misunderstood, blind faith. It's something that boggles many people's minds. I wanted to read a quote from Sam Harris's book, The End of Faith. And here's what he says about faith in general. That liberals and conservatives have reached a rare consensus. Religious beliefs are simply beyond the scope of rational discourse. Criticizing a person's ideas about God and the afterlife is thought to be impolitic in a way that criticizing his ideas about physics and history is not. He's basically saying, if you have this irrational belief of religion, you kind of have this way out. You can just play this card. Oh, it's just my religion. Just what I think. It's what I believe. He goes on and says, and so it is that when a Muslim suicide bomber obliterates himself along with a score of innocents on a Jerusalem street, the role that faith played in his actions is invariably discounted. His motives must have been political, economic, or entirely personal. Without faith, desperate people would still do terrible things. Faith itself is always and everywhere exonerated. Faith has an excuse. But here's the thing. Sam Harris doesn't believe that faith is a viable reason to do something. Now, I wouldn't say that we should go, you know, bomb places and things like that, like some other faith systems would. But I think he thinks that it's silly to have that motivation. He thinks it's silly to believe that there might be a truth that can determine what you do in your life. Here's another quote. This is a famous one from Richard Dawkins, famous atheist. He says, it is absolutely safe to say that if you meet somebody who claims not to believe in evolution, that person is ignorant, stupid, or insane, or wicked, but I'd rather not consider that. Now, he's talking about evolution, but I think we all understand that stereotyping people that don't believe in evolution are generally religious people. But if you don't hold to his understanding, his truth about his worldview, about his faith system, you're ignorant, stupid, insane, perhaps evil. I think that quote pretty much sums up and illustrates the general perception that people have of those that hold to a faith system. Now, let me ask a question. That's what people think these days. That's what people are going to be asking us about. Can you stand for truth? If somebody comes to you with that quote, hey, oh, you're religious. Oh, hey, you think that you hold a faith system. You think that you actually can have faith. You think that you can actually know truth. So tell me, what is truth? When somebody asks you that question, when somebody comes to you and they're questioning faith in general, when somebody comes to you and is questioning why you go to church every Sunday, why you give money to help other people, they're wanting to find some answers. And I think it's our duty, it's our job to give them those answers. 1 Peter 3:15, turn there. 1 Peter 3:15. Remember, this is our responsibility in 1 Peter 3:15. But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason of the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame. For it is better to suffer for doing good, that it should be God's will, than for doing evil. So we're told to be able to give an answer to those that are questioning us. If they're seeing us, and if they're seeing this hope that's within us, guess what? People will be asking about that. Why does that affect us? Why does that change us? If it's truth, I think it will change us. Let's try to understand their thinking, though. Let's understand where those people are coming from in their thought process, that they believe that it's presumptuous or arrogant for us to think that we could possibly understand truth. I think many of those people think of it think of us sharing religion or talking about these things in a context of a church setting, it's almost, from their perspective, it's almost like we're trying to convince somebody of our favorite movie. It's just subjective. Yeah, I might have some legitimately good reasons to convince you that this movie is my favorite. It has this great director. It has Benedict Cumberbatch. I mean, that's a winner right there. You know, it has this cinematography. It has this soundtrack. But at the end of the day, maybe that person doesn't like that style of soundtrack or that director. You know, somehow doesn't like Benedict Cumberbatch. And that person at the end of the day has their opinion about which movie is the best, which movie is their favorite. But I think the question is this: is that how truth works? Is that how faith works? Is having your own kind of faith pretty much the same thing as having your own personal opinion about which movie is the best? Is that the way it works? I think the answer is no. I think faith and truth is more like this. Let's say we all go to the Grand Canyon together, and you're standing on a rock that's like cracked and broken. You're standing right on the edge of the entire Grand Canyon. And it seems like it would be silly for you to say to me, it's like, hey, you should watch out. That rock is crumbling underneath your feet. Let me ask a question. Is it both true and untrue that you're safe? Is it true that you can be both dead and not dead if you are on that rock and it falls and you crumble and you go falling down into the Grand Canyon? See, that's how truth works. You can't be safe and unsafe while standing right here on the edge of the Grand Canyon. If you fall 100 feet into the Grand Canyon, it's not going to be your personal preference if you're alive or not. That's how many people look at faith systems, how people look at truth. Well, your truth is just your truth, and my truth is my truth, and that's okay. We can all have our own truth, and as long as yours doesn't interfere with mine, we're fine. But can all faith systems interact that way? Can they all be the same? Like I said before, maybe your faith is like standing on this broken rock. Maybe my faith is like that broken rock. But if I fall into this giant pit, I'm not going to be safe. It doesn't matter what my opinion of that is. It doesn't matter what I think about it. It doesn't matter what I was taught in philosophy class or taught in church. There's some kind of a foundational, timeless truth that supersedes all of those things. And I think that leads us to ask this question. All right, we all understand that if I fall into the Grand Canyon, that's not going to help, you know, my golf swing, clearly. But does it work the same way for truth? Can I know the absolute truth about faith and faith systems the same way that I can know that jumping off the Grand Canyon isn't healthy for me? Can I really know what truth is? Is that possible? I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is completely yes, an objective, absolute truth. What if I ask the question, is there absolute truth? Can you really answer no to that question? That's a contradiction. No, there is no absolute truth. What have I just done? Well, I've just kind of made an absolute truth. I've kind of just said my truth. What I've just said, my statement, is in of itself true. But even farther than that, if I were to say that, well, no, not really. You can believe whatever you want to believe. Well, then I'm going to believe that truth is in existence. That doesn't really answer the question. It pushes it farther back. It's actually making it more subjective to think of it as such. At the end of the day, it's not like picking out a favorite movie. At the end of the day, it's more like standing over the Grand Canyon. You know, as a church, I think that's our point. That's why we tell people about Come and See Sunday. Because that exchange in the Bible where Nathaniel and Philip are talking, and the one brother says, come and see this Jesus. He wants to show him the truth of Jesus. That's what you do with truth. You have to share it. Because if there is this truth, and it is important to us, what else could we possibly do? I think many of us would say, okay, well, that's great, but which truth is it now? Okay, maybe there can be an absolute truth. Maybe I can subscribe to a faith system. But now the question is, really, which one? Because there's kind of a lot of them out there. I think people realize that. There's a lot of faith systems. There's a lot of arguments that can be made concerning which Bible version you can read, which faith you might choose to believe in, whether it's a Western or an Eastern kind of a belief. And maybe let's say you decide to believe in the Bible. Well, which passages of the Bible are true? Is the Bible even trustworthy? Maybe you believe in Jesus, but maybe you can't really believe that he's really God on earth. You know, I think we need to understand, we need to develop a way of looking at faith systems or looking at our own faith and examining it in light of truth, in light of knowledge. We need to come to know things. And knowledge is defined philosophically speaking, as properly justified true belief. There's a lot of different terms in there. Properly justified true belief. Properly justified means, is this something worthwhile to believe in? Is there evidence beyond a doubt or evidence beyond my currently held belief to make me believe something else? And unfortunately, Jimmy and I only have 20 minutes of sermon apiece, and otherwise we would talk about many of the evidence, I believe, for the scriptures. But I think that, yes, it is properly justified to hold to this. The evidence of whether or not it's true. Can we know it to be true? Can we understand it? Can we verify it? Again, we don't have all the time this morning to talk about, but yes, I believe that it is verifiable. And again, it is a belief. It does require some faith. I can't see Jesus right now, but there's many things I can't see, whether it's philosophical or scientific, that I can't see, that I have to accept based on evidence, based on faith. I think we need to understand this, that acceptance of a new belief, the evidence to support its truth, far outweighs the evidence that exists to support a prior belief, is the logical thing to do. I think that's something we need to understand as Christians, and again, for this Come and See Sunday. As we're all here joined together, I know we've spent a lot of time with each other worshiping Jesus, worshiping God, thanking him for all that he's done, spending time on this, the Lord's Supper. We spent a lot of time talking about him in our Bible classes. And if you're a Christian, throughout the week, you've spent a lot of time praying, maybe, or reading your Bible, going on the internet, reading things about church or Jesus or religion and so forth. That's just what we do. We examine and we explore. But here's the thing, and this is a challenge for those of us that are Christians. Like I said, something that's properly truth, something that's properly justified, true belief, is something that we know rationally. If I can't answer somebody's questions, is it really rational for me to believe in Christianity? I think it is personally. But if I don't have an answer for those things, if I don't have a reason to believe it, me believing in Jesus is just an irrational belief. That should scare us, I think. Is my belief in God and Jesus irrational at a personal level? Or do I have reasons to back that up in my life? Because if there are no reasons, it won't take very much to convince us otherwise. And if I don't have any reasons, I will not be able to convince other people of otherwise. And I think that's something that we should understand as Christians. And that's why we open it up as an invitation. We're going to sing a song in a second that's been selected, that Isaac will lead us in. But while we prepare for that, I want to ask this to those of you that are not Christians. Like I said, we only have about 15 to 20 minutes for each of these lessons that we get on Sunday. So there's not time to go over everything. But like I said, and this, I know this is a bold claim, but I think that there is more than enough reasonable evidence to come to a logical conclusion that God is who he says that he is in the scriptures, that this is a reliable historical document, and that Jesus died, rose from the dead, and we can be with him for eternity in heaven. If there are questions about that, I'd love for you to come ask me. If there are questions about becoming a Christian, let's talk about it. And if you are a Christian and you want help and you want support in coming to a rational understanding of Jesus and God and learning reasons to believe in him, we ask that you do that this morning and you come forward while we stand and sing.